Thinking Liberty, episode 17.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Thinking Liberty. We're currently on a remote location here in Atlanta. Yeah.
We've been traveling a lot, you can tell, so it's hard to remember where we are.
Yeah, one of these days I'm hoping to record a podcast where I'm not really tired. That'd be great.
I don't know if that'll happen anytime soon, but we'll get there.
But anyway, as always, I'm Zach.
And I'm Sarah. And yeah, so we're hanging out in Atlanta this week. We'll actually be flying back to Massachusetts tomorrow. It's been a crazy, I was going to say week, but really month. But this week, I had to travel for on-site. So I was on-site with a client for a couple days. And then we spent some time catching up with family and friends. And we also have been spending the weekend at Dragon Con. We've been going at it pretty hard, so we tried to set aside some time to sit down and record because we love doing this, so we wanted to make sure that we had an episode for tomorrow. Also, I would love to say that someday we won't be waiting last minute to record, but you never know with us.
Yeah, but we need to almost wait till the end of the week so we have stuff to talk about.
That is very true, yeah. So yep. That's our excuse, and we're staying to that one.
Yeah. Yeah, but as Sarah said, we're here in Atlanta for Dragon Con, and it's going on right now, so we're going to be doing that again a little bit later tonight, checking it out one last time, hanging out with some friends, and then tomorrow is Labor Day, or when you're listening to it, you know, it will be Labor Day, or it'll have already passed, so we're going to, you know, take it more easy that day and just kind of hit up the vendors and maybe play some of the free arcade games they have, and then we'll be getting on our flight back to wherever the heck we are.
Yeah, so that's kind of one of the interesting things about moving around and traveling a lot is, you know, it's great because you get to experience a lot and see a lot, but sometimes you also forget where you are.
More often for me.
But yeah, it's been great. Like Zach said, I mean, we've been checking out Dragon Con and catching up with friends, and we've got to see a couple of really cool panels. Zach got to meet one of his magician heroes last night.
Yeah, got to meet Brian Brushwood. So if you're not familiar with him, you should look him up on YouTube. He does a channel called Scam School. That's really fun. He does magic tricks and teaches them to people. And then we also were just, we were standing at what just happened to be the entrance for the panelist, or, you know, for anybody coming to kind of hang out on the Walk of Fame or sign autographs. So it was pretty neat to stand there because going by, we saw Stan Lee twice
walking. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, once going in the building, once going out. And we saw Willa Holland from Arrow.
She plays Thea.
Yeah, and we saw whoever plays Laurel, which I don't know the actress's name, but Black Canary, which is a little bit of a spoiler, so sorry if you haven't seen Arrow.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Let's see. Who else did we see? The guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. That's the blue guy.
Michael Rooker?
Yeah, Michael Rooker. I don't know. I'm really bad with actors' names. And I feel like there was one more. Oh, and Arthur Darvill. We saw him. He's from Doctor Who and some other BBC shows. And
yeah, he was supposed to be at the panel that we were standing in line for, but he had to catch a flight last minute, apparently. So we missed him, but we did get to sit in on a panel with Karen Gillan and Alex Kingston from Doctor Who and several other shows and movies as well. So, I mean, if you're not familiar with Dragon Con, I think we've talked about it a little bit in several episodes because we've been excited about going. So it's just, you know, basically a big convention where a bunch of different fandoms come together to celebrate fandom in general, and they really get a lot of big names to come for panels, and that's during the day, you check those out, and then at night, you know, it's just a bunch of people getting together and hanging out, listening to music, dancing, partying, so it's just really a cool experience, and the costumes are amazing. You should definitely Google Dragon Con costumes and take a look at some of them because the people are so creative and so talented. It's amazing what they can do.
So anyway, for this week, we wanted to talk about something we have a little bit of an experience with now, and it's, you know, an ever-growing thing we're learning about and experiencing, which is traveling with pets. So
yes, and it's a very timely episode for us because, like I said, we've been traveling a lot lately. We've been in several Airbnbs, we've been in several hotels, and we've just, you know, been kind of hopping around all over the place, which, you know, we travel all the time anyway because we're in the RV moving every 2 weeks. But this has been very much different because we've both had to travel for work and then, you know, trips for catching up with family and friends as well. So it's really given us a more broad perspective. And one thing that I've noticed is you can really find a lot of good information online, and we'll try to provide some of that to you too. But not all of it is, you know, personal experience based. And some of it, you know, you're looking at it and it's either super high level and doesn't give you specifics, or it is too low level and it's kind of all common sense. And we'll probably give a little bit of both of that. You know, there'll probably be some things that we talk about and mention that you might feel are common sense, but we feel like it's worth mentioning just because, you know, if a first time pet owner is traveling, they might not be aware of it. And then some of it might be pretty high level too, just because we might not understand, or we might think that everybody has an understanding of it. So if something, you know, you have prompts more questions, let us know and we'll address those questions on a future episode.
Yeah, so if you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, you probably heard us mention our dog. So we have a little Yorkie, but he's big for being a Yorkie.
Yeah, he's about 15 pounds and he's pretty tall and he's very rambunctious, but he's also pretty well behaved for traveling. So I think we've really been lucky with him so far.
Yeah, and we've had him for going on 2 years now. He's almost about to turn two, and we've traveled with him ever since we got him. I mean, we got him when we were already in the RV, so we've, you know, been going around the country for as long as he's been alive. We've also taken him to Argentina with us, so, you know, that was obviously a flight, but Argentina or American Airlines, who we flew with, required him to be checked as cargo.
Which we won't do again.
Yeah, which was sad for us. But
we'll talk about that more later.
Yeah, but so he's flown as cargo. And then this last time, where we brought him from Massachusetts here to Atlanta, he flew with Sarah in the cabin.
Yep.
So, oh, and we've also taken him on a few ferry boats.
Yep. And he stayed on a yacht. Small yacht.
He stayed on a sailboat. So I think that's all the ways I can think of that
he's
we've
a pretty well traveled dog.
That we've traveled with him. Yeah. So he's been now to almost as many states as our RV has, since we've hit up some of them now twice. Well, I guess he's actually been to more states than the RV has since he's ridden with us in the car.
That's true.
Oh, and I was going to mention too that. Oh my goodness. You're definitely going to be able to. Yeah. So you can definitely tell we have a dog. I didn't even need to mention that, apparently. Because for one, I know you're hearing the little click-clack of his claws on the hardwood. And now he's playing with his loudest, squeakiest toy, which he hasn't done all day.
No.
And now that we're recording, it's time to get hyper.
It's because he's not getting the attention.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll have to have a show about podcasting with a dog someday whenever we figure out how to do that. But
it's so much easier in the RV where we have carpet and you can't really hear his claws clacking. Yeah. Although I'm about to change that, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
But in many ways, our generation is very blessed because traveling with pets is a lot easier than it has been in the past. I mean, if you think about it, our generation and maybe a little bit of our parents' generation are some of the first to really treat their pets like family or like their babies. And, you know, we want to keep our pets with us. Like, you know, it makes us sad when we have to leave Ollie even for just a weekend with family or friends or at a doggy daycare.
Now he's playing with a bottle as loudly as he possibly can. I don't even know where he got that.
I gave it to him like an hour ago.
Normally, I think I would go through and edit all this out, but I think it's appropriate for this time. Let's just leave it all in. You can hear what we had to put up with when we're recording a podcast episode.
But yeah, so, you know, we're some of the first to really want to keep our pets with us and, you know, experience things with our pets. And for me, you know, it brings me such joy to see how excited he gets about things. I mean, he loves going on hikes and climbing up mountains. I mean, he sometimes is like a little goat. Like, he just loves climbing up things and jumping on things. And I mean, when we've taken him on the ferries, like Zach mentioned, I mean, he loves it. He loves the wind and he loves the smell of the ocean and he loves looking at all the birds flying around. And so it's just kind of fun. I mean, I guess it's just a good experience. And I just, you know, think that more and more of us are sharing that idea and that thought. And so we just want to keep our furry little friends with us. And more places are trying to cater to that. And, you know, if you look at, you know, Bring Fido, you have that resource to look up pet-friendly restaurants and hotels. And a lot of Airbnbs allow you to bring in pets, like the one we're staying in right now. You know, Uber and Lyft, it's a courtesy to call ahead and let them know that you have a pet with you. But for the most part, I don't think I've ever been turned down by them. They've never said no so far. Cross my fingers. So it's, you know, more and more people are conscious of the fact that, you know, we want our pets to feel loved and included, and we want to share that experience with them. And the thing to try to keep in mind is to make sure that they're also comfortable and that they're also enjoying their time, and not to just do it selfishly. So there's a lot of things that you have to keep in mind to go with it. So you need to consider personality, health, and their age before you start traveling with your pet. You know, like I said, our dog, Ollie, he loves doing things and exploring things and going places. So for the most part, his personality is perfect for it. We have learned a couple of things that we need to look for when we're at places, and we'll dive into that more in a minute. But you also have to think about their health. You know, if they're sick, or if they have a broken leg, or they have arthritis or something like that, you have to think about, is it going to be comfortable for them to go, or would it be better to put them in a daycare or something like that? And if money's a concern, putting them in a daycare is sometimes cheaper, if not equal, the price of taking them with you for traveling, because there are a lot of expenses that go with that. And then also age. If they're too young, there will be places where you're not allowed, like flights. They have to be a certain number of weeks old to be able to fly, and I think airlines differ on the age, so you'll need to check those pages for your specific airline. Sometimes,
and especially, I guess, when it comes to airline size too.
Yes,
I'm not sure you're gonna have any luck bringing, you know, a Great Dane with you, even as cargo. I don't know, it may be possible as cargo, but, you know, we're lucky to have Ollie be about 15 pounds, so it's not really too big of an issue to take him in the cabin or as cargo or really anyway. But that being said, I guess if your dog just happens to be huge or something like that, then you just have to think of other types of travel you might want to do. Like, we've seen people RVing with several huge dogs. Like, we saw somebody in Dallas who had two Irish Wolfhounds, which compete with Great Dane for being the biggest dog. And then I think they had one or two giant something or others. I don't know. I want to call it a giant Cocker Spaniel, but I don't think that's real.
Irish Setter? I don't know.
No, it was like a big, curly-haired, you know, tan dog. It looked like a Cocker Spaniel, except huge. So, I don't know, but they were traveling with gigantic dogs in their RV. So, yeah, so you really have to take into the consideration, you know, the breed and the size and things like that, and choose sort of the appropriate method of travel. If you have a smaller dog or a cat, maybe, you know, you can just about do anything. You can take them on a plane. You can take them on ferries and things like that. But if you have a huge dog, you know, you might be limited to just road trips, whether it's in your car or on an RV. And we did see some bigger dogs on the ferries and stuff too. But
yeah, and when you're thinking about, you know, the method of transportation or how you might want to travel or even where your destination is, you also need to think about the comfort of your pet. You know, how will the experience be for them? You know, when you're thinking about packing, do they have a favorite blanket or a favorite toy that will help make them feel more relaxed or more comfortable? You know, you should make sure to bring that. And then, you know, if they're not used to traveling, you need to be able to take time to introduce it to them. So for road trips, if they're not used to being in the car for long distances, maybe start practicing and taking slightly longer trips. And don't, you know, take a 15-hour drive all at once before they get used to it. And, you know, taking short trips will allow you to see if there are any potential issues, if your pet gets stressed out or do they get car sick. And that way you can prepare in advance for any longer road trips that you want to take.
Yeah, and it helps you discover, too, what the best way for them to travel in the car or the RV is. Like, we found that Ollie does best now in a kennel while we're moving in the RV. So we tell him to go to his home, and he climbs in and just, you know, lays there and stares at us while we drive. For a while, we had tried, just the passenger holding him, which still works for short trips, and it's working, you know, better in the car. But he would get sick way too much just from the movement. And plus, like, he just wanted to be held and wouldn't have it any other way. Like, he wouldn't lay there and let you do anything else. He'd climb and, like, you know, into your arms and basically require your full attention. So, you know, sometimes it's nice for the driver or the passenger to be able to, you know, work on their phone or their computer or take pictures or, you know, be the DJ of the car or something. But he basically prevented any of that from being able to be done. So, you know, for us, the kennel is the best way for him in the RV anyway.
And, yeah, you know, and it's, you know, he definitely, I think, in the long run, is more comfortable that way, too. I mean, he, you know, will get his little blanket, and he just kind of lays down, and sometimes he'll go to sleep a little bit. But also, well,
one thing
know,
I noticed,
tends to be safer, I think, so.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is when he's being held, he sleeps the entire time. And so when we got to our destinations, and sometimes we'd be driving for quite a while, you know, maybe an entire day or a half day with some stops, he'd get there and he wouldn't have slept all day, so he's ready to go. He's, you know, going to run around and go crazy while we're exhausted and just want to sleep. And in the kennel, he basically stays awake. Like, he might snooze a little bit, but he likes to just, like, you know, sit there and look at us and look around the RV a little bit, and it keeps him awake at least, so he's not such a ball of energy when we finally get to our destination. And, you know, maybe we can take a nap after being so tired and not have to worry about him jumping on our face while we're trying to sleep.
Yeah, and if you're going to be putting them in a kennel or even like a soft travel case, which will be required if you fly and bring them into the cabin with you, you know, consider buying it early so that you can get your pet comfortable with it. You know, leave the case open so they can go in and out. Lay a blanket, some of their toys in there, give them treats when they're inside, just things to make them feel like, oh, this is a good place, this is a happy place. And I was also reading, you know, that a lot of accidents every year are caused by pets moving around in the vehicle because they can be distracting, they can knock your arm, especially depending on the size of them. So sometimes, you know, securing them is just safer and better anyway. And if you are taking a road trip, remember to stop every couple of hours. You know, I think it's recommended every 2 to 3 hours so that they can stretch their legs a little bit and have a potty break and not get too overwhelmed with just laying there, just sitting there the whole time.
So what about airline travel? I know we can get into talking about checking him as cargo and what our experiences were with that. But on our most recent flight, Sarah and I flew separately since hers was for business and I was just coming down here for Dragon Con and things like that, and I flew on a different airline. So she took Ollie. So how was that experience of just having him in the cabin? Do you think that was something you would do again?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was his first time and, you know, he doesn't like not being able to see us. So I think, you know, when we first put him underneath the seat, that made him a little nervous because he couldn't really see me too well. But he's also really good. He doesn't mind movement. So when we were sitting still on the tarmac, he was a little uncomfortable and a little nervous and whined. But then as soon as we started rolling down and taxiing, he stopped. And then for the whole flight, he was pretty quiet. I would give him treats every now and then and kind of talk to him to reassure him and let him know I was still there. And thankfully, it wasn't a very long flight either. But then as soon as we touched down, he started whining again because he wanted out. Like, he was like, this is over. It's done, right? We're done. But it was definitely good. We definitely learned a lot of things. So to talk more about, you know, requirements for flying with your pet, some of them will vary airline to airline, But the basics are, you know, making sure that you get a airline-friendly carrier. And you need to check, you know, the seat dimensions for that. And I think basically at this point, the only ones that you can have in cabin with you are small dogs. Because even though the medium-sized cases and the large cases say airline-approved, they definitely would never fit. Yeah, I can't imagine them fitting underneath these seats.
Yeah, it's not true for every flight anymore. They, I don't know, I guess they are having smaller and smaller underseat dimensions to the point where I think there are some airplanes that are too small to fit any of the carriers. So you definitely have to check on that. Probably, you know, best to do it before you even buy your ticket. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a little wiggle room, at least not in policy, but in, you know, if you bring maybe a slightly out of bounds carrier, you can shove it under the seat, but, you know, I wouldn't recommend that. I would try to stay in the specifications.
I mean, if you have a very small dog, it's not a problem because, you know, they just lay down, so you just squish it a little bit. Like, I think ours is maybe 1 inch too tall, but Ollie's still, you know, when he's laying down, he still has plenty of headroom, and it's not like anything squishing him or pushing up against him, so he still has plenty of room. So, yeah, definitely think about that when you're thinking about flying with your pet. The other things are going to be, making sure you call ahead in plenty enough time. I think pretty typical is most airlines require 7 days notice, but really since each airline has different, limit numbers for how many pets they will allow in the cabin. I think for Delta, it was 4 in the main cabin, 2 in the business or plus area, and then 2 in first class. So definitely, you know, the sooner you know that you're doing it and the sooner you call ahead, the more likely it is that they still have room for your pet. And then also making sure that all of their health records are up to date and that you have a copy of a health certificate with you. And that's not necessarily a requirement by the airlines, but we were told that TSA will sometimes ask for it.
I think that guy might have been wrong too, though.
Well, I read it later online that they will sometimes too.
When we checked in, I think this guy was technically supposed to check himself and didn't.
Oh, okay.
But I guess TSA probably does have the, you know, right to check if they want to.
Yeah.
Just probably don't in order to keep things moving.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's never happened, but you know, we went through and they didn't really care.
Yeah, but it's always better to be safe than sorry. So, you know, and also you want to make sure that your pet is healthy. So, you know, making sure that they're all up to date on their shots and vaccines and everything, and making sure that they aren't carrying any disease that could be spread to any other dog or pet, you know, is good. So making sure that they're up to date on all of that. And then also, I think it can be tempting to want to sedate your pet, but most places and most vets will say that they don't recommend doing that unless there is a very clear medical reason. And the reason for that being is that it's very easy to give your dog an overdose, and then with the changes in altitude, medicine can affect you differently. So definitely don't do anything without your vet's input first. Just to make sure that you don't give your dog anything or your cat or whatever other animals are allowed in the cabin, something that could potentially hurt them or make them feel sick. Yeah, so I think for us, we've decided that flying cargo is definitely not something that we want to do again in the future. There are just too many, you know, stories and statistics on how it's not safe for your dogs. And even if the percentage is kind of low that your pet will die or get injured on a flight, some stats from 2016, over 500,000 pets were flown in the United States, and during that time period, 26 of them died and 22 of them were injured. And even if that's a low-ish percentage, that's not really a risk that I want to take. You know, especially if we can avoid it. So, you know, for us, we will always either cabin or, you know, put him in doggy daycare or road trip it up, because I, you know, that's just not a risk for us. And there's also a lot of people that talk about, you know, well, it's easy to just get your dog an emotional support certificate. And I won't dive into that because, you know, to each your own, and I'm not going to judge anyone for their choices or what they do, because if they feel that's what they have to do to travel with their pet, that's fine. But for me, I'm not sure how ethical it is to say that your dog is an emotional support dog when they're not. Like, and getting that certificate can make it difficult or more difficult for the people who actually do have emotional support dogs and do need them, because people will, over time, start to not believe them, and it can make it harder for them to bring their dogs with them when they actually need them, because people give them a harder time, and I don't want to be a part of that problem.
Yeah, whenever someone abuses a system, it just makes it harder for the people who actually need to use it. But speaking of things that could possibly be unethical, I'll tell our quick story about our nightmare that we had with taking Ollie internationally. So, as we said earlier, we went to Argentina with him, and getting him there was okay. It was a little bit of red tape. We had to take him to the vet during a certain time period, get the vet to fill out this form that was in both Spanish and English, and then I had to take it to the USDA and have them just like rubber stamp it. They didn't even look at him. I paid them like $30 and they stamped it. So that was that, and that's all we needed really to get him out of the country, because, you know, everything checked out.
Yeah, he so was up to date. Interject here and just, you know, say that your airline, if you're flying to another country, your airline will have links for you that talk about, you know, the requirements of the country that you're going to, or how to find the requirements of the country you're going to. And then there are also, you know, websites, if you search, you know, traveling, taking your pet to Argentina, you know, you'll find a website that talks about the requirements, and it'll be, you know, a government website. And so that's what we did. We did the research, and it said, you know, you have to take them to the vet and get them a health certificate and make sure that they have these vaccines. And that was what that country required. And then you take that and you get a stamp by the USDA. And that's what we did.
Yeah, I think bringfido.com and pettravel.com both have good resources on that. I can't remember exactly which one we used.
I linked to it from the airline, I'm pretty sure. That's how I originally found it.
Okay.
And then I was looking at the USDA site, I think, too.
But there is one website, I think it's one of those, that kind of catalogs that information for every country.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about planning a trip and you're trying to pick a country where you might want to bring your dog, you can do that. But yeah, like Zach said, so we did that, and it was kind of difficult and kind of a pain, but we wanted to make sure that, you know, Ollie was healthy for the trip and that he'd be allowed in, so we did that. But at no point did any of the websites mention requirements for bringing the pet back into the country, and that goes into the story that Zach's sharing.
Yeah, no, well, they didn't mention it, I don't think, but also I'm pretty sure somewhere along the line somebody actually gave me wrong information. They were telling, or I was told at some point, or my understanding was that the paperwork that we had signed by the USDA would be good for both a trip there and a trip back within a certain amount of time, which we thought that that amount of time was more than
covered. Like 90 days or
something. Yeah, we thought it was something more than covered by how long we were going to be down there. And it wasn't until the very day that we were coming back to the United States from Argentina that we found out that wasn't the case. We started to get on our flight, and the sort of attendant standing at the ticketing counter line told us that we didn't have the right paperwork and we needed to go to some office that they had inside the airport to get it. And
sent us a. But I would also like to say that we are so used to, in the U.S., getting to airports super early, that we got to the airport I think 2 hours or 3 hours even before check-in. And
well,
we
I think
had
it,
to wait.
It recommended that to us at one point. We're like, you know, get there this many hours early, and then if you have any special circumstances, add another hour. So we did that.
Yeah, so we got there pretty early, and the American Airlines gate wasn't even open. Like, there was nobody there. So we basically sat around for 2 hours before the gate opened. And then we went over, and they told us that we didn't have the right paperwork. And I think this is the point where, you know, don't assume anything, because we assumed that since we had to worry about Argentina's laws and requirements to bring Ollie in, that we only had to worry about the United States requirements and laws to get Ollie into the U.S. We never thought about the requirements to get Ollie out of Argentina.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be okay with any animal leaving. Well, yeah, whatever. It's not our problem if it's going away.
Yeah, so we went, and it was crazy. So we went to the deck.
Do you just want me to finish the story?
Go ahead. Okay.
Well, we went to the office that we were pointed to, and I hadn't learned as much Spanish as I would have hoped at my time there, and the woman at this desk didn't know any English. So for a little bit, we're just kind of having very bad communication. She's telling us we have the wrong form, that we're handing her the wrong information. We don't really know what's wrong about it. She can't understand us. We can't understand her. And luckily, there happened to be a girl standing there having sort of similar stuff done for her cat, and who spoke, you know, perfect English and perfect Spanish, and she was able to help us. So she starts translating for us, and we're basically told that the paperwork that we have that we got from the United States was no longer any good, and that it had only been good for 10 days. And, you know, that went against what we had been told. I don't think we had read anything like that. So,
well, I mean, we thought it was good for 10 days leaving the U.S. and going into Argentina. Like, we had to have it done within 10 days of that flight. And we did. And we didn't know that it would expire and not work for the return trip, which I guess we should have assumed, but
I don't know. But so at this point, I don't know what to do. We're just like, she's like, well, you'll have to go to this office on Monday when they open, and it was Saturday, and we were trying to get home, and our flights were in a few hours at this point.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't have any more reservations, we don't have an Airbnb, we don't really have any more time to be in Argentina. So it was very stressful for us, and I thought maybe I was going to have to stay behind, or, you know, possibly both of us just miss our flights and stay and try to buy a flight the next week or something. But basically, through the translator, I said, like, what can we do to sort this out right now? Like, we don't care what we have to do or how much it costs, which I kind of knew that last part was going to be a signal to them, because I've heard a lot of stories from my Argentinian friends about how it's kind of a bribing culture where if you have enough money, things will just get done for you. And I've heard stories about, you know, police pulling people over and basically giving them a small gift of whatever you happen to have on you can be enough.
Yeah.
And think, not that I'm suggesting that, but I don't know.
Yeah. And they use some, we were told that sometimes they have a vet that specifically works for the airport and comes to do, assessments, and he does have some, you know, on site hours. So they called that vet and explained the situation to him, and he came in, but it was going to take him an hour to get there. And at this point we've been at the airport about 4 hours and our flight is in an hour. And so we're kind of getting a little stressed out. And I think while we were waiting, I had to go to another office and pay some sort of
tax or something.
We didn't fully understand what it was. We just knew that I had to get a form filled out by the tax office.
Yeah, you had to go. It was a bank. You had to go to the bank, pay a tax, and get a slip showing that you had paid that fee or tax through the bank.
Yep.
And then give it back to them.
To bring my American puppy back to America.
Yeah. I mean, there was sort of a process for this. Of like, they have an emergency vet they can call. But that just makes it seem nicer. I feel like we just bribed the guy, because we told him, we'll pay, just let's make this happen. We'll pay for it. We don't care. And he shows up. He fills out all the paperwork we need, and that should have been done already, I guess. Takes our money and never even looks at the dog. He's just like asking us things like, what color is he? I'm like,
is he healthy? Does he have all his shots?
I don't even know. He probably didn't ask that. He just checked.
Give him another shot or something.
He just checked all the boxes that needed to be checked, signed it, took our money, and we were good to go.
Yeah.
So
with like, I think we had 10 minutes to get to our gate.
Yeah, and then when we're going to our gate, we get stopped, and they're trying to get us through, and they're not sure if our baggage is even going to make it to the flight. And they're like, oh, you should have gotten here a lot earlier. And we're like,
at this point, we'd already been at the airport for 5 hours.
Yeah, and we're like, we were actually here before this gate even opened, but
it's like, but thanks for that advice. We'll keep it in mind next time.
So
the moral of the story is, don't assume anything. Do as much research as possible. And even when you think you've done all the research possible, do some more.
Yeah, and that's probably not going to be a typical story for a lot of international travel. Like, not to bash Argentina, because I loved it there and I want to return, but it wasn't the most well put together country in terms of planning systems. You know, we noticed that a lot of places we'd went to, they just didn't seem to have anything figured out and just sort of flying by the seat of their pants on everything. And I don't know. I guess it was no different at the airport. You know, gates aren't open when you think they might be. Information isn't given to you. Just, you know, I don't know. It was crazy. It was stressful. I'm glad we finally got done with it. But at the end of it, just looking back on it, I can't really describe what we did as anything other than bribing a veterinarian to fill out the form for us and send us on our way.
Yeah, and it's definitely a learning experience. You know, I'm sure some of you are laughing because you've, you know, traveled internationally with your pets before and you've experienced something similar, or you know, you were able to find the information in advance. But yeah, it was definitely a learning experience for us.
I remember, too, like, after all this, well, we hadn't had this trouble yet, but we had the trouble of getting him into the country. And, you know, the USDA and all this, you know, questions and inspections of the dog. And then when we're on going to Chile, we're in the bus, and we get to the border, and I just see a dog running around into one country, and then back into Argentina, back into Chile. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, all that work. And then, you know, dogs just do whatever they want anyway when they live in these countries. But
yeah, also, to go back a bit, you know, we did all the paperwork on the American side or the United States side. And then when we landed in Argentina, we also had to do some paperwork at the CENESA office. And, you know, they weren't quite open because we had actually gotten, I think by the time we got into Argentina, it was a pretty early morning. So they weren't quite open yet. So we had to wait a little bit for them and fill out some paperwork. And they only took cash. So make sure to, you know, always have cash with you when you're traveling, well, or a way to get cash.
Yeah, we ended up paying in a mixture of, might as well say dinero.
Wrong country.
No, that just means money. We ended up paying in a mixture of pesos and dollars because they also have, like, insane limits on their ATMs where we couldn't withdraw enough money. And, you know, we're at the airport. We're about to go back to the U.S. We weren't loaded down with pesos because we had, you know, basically gotten rid of them as much as we could.
Yep.
So,
yeah, the whole thing was just kind of stressful, but we definitely appreciated having him with us. I mean, we were in South America for 2 months, so that would have been hard for us. But, you know, so definitely be prepared for some struggles when you're traveling with pets, and definitely be able to kind of go with the flow and think on your feet. And be prepared to learn.
If you're flexible on dates, that might even be the best, because, you know, had we been more flexible, we could have been like, all right, cool, we're stuck here for another week, no big deal. But unfortunately, with our work schedule and just, you know, not having the plans laid out for any sort of contingencies, you know, it was a little bit stressful for us thinking that we might not get to leave on the day that we were planning to.
Yeah, so if you are flying with your pet, you know, whether it's domestic or international, you know, be sure to contact the airline. Make sure that you follow up on any health certificate requirements. You know, let the airline know the size of your pet and the size of your carrier. Sometimes they are required to jot those notes down. And also keep in mind that some pets just are not able to fly. You know, some breeds are not able to breathe well in the cargo areas. So if that is your only option, you know, you might have to.
And they don't accept dogs with small, short snouts, like pugs and, you know, sort of bulldogs like that, because I think they die at an even larger rate because they have breathing issues and they'll, yeah, I don't know. Not sure exactly what happens, but it's really sad and probably safer to either have them in the, I don't know, can you even have them in the cabin or is it just no cargo?
I think it's just no cargo.
All right, well, I wouldn't really suggest that anyway, but
yeah, but that's just, you know, if that is, you know, the route that you're taking, you know, I know some airlines are better about cargo pets than others. And if your pet weighs more than less than 20 pounds, definitely consider having them in the cabin with you, because it's definitely an easier experience for your pet. Like I said, you know, I was able to give Ollie treats and talk to him and just kind of reassure him that I was there. And so it's definitely less stressful for the animals. You also need to make sure that there are no extra requirements that the airline has. I think sometimes they may require certain certificates. I think I read one thing about an acclimation certificate. So just, I think that one only applies to cargo.
What is that?
So it's like you were talking about specific breeds. So if your dog is like a mixed breed, they may require that you get a certificate from your vet that says that they're able to handle the altitude changes and everything.
Oh, I didn't know that. Cool. Yeah, so I guess we've talked a lot about flying on this episode, and I guess that's probably because we'd consider it definitely the most complicated of the forms of travel. You know, if you're on a road trip, you're, you know, in your RV, in a car, whatever, it's not a big deal. You just kind of throw your dogs in the back, or you load your cat up or whatever and take off, and you kind of adjust yourself. You decide and you find what your pet likes, what it doesn't like, what it can handle and what it can, and just go with it. But definitely we've found that flying is the most complicated, as it is even with people, I guess. It's much easier and a lot of times preferable to drive rather than fly. But.
Yeah. And so a couple of kind of more things that are probably common sense but worth mentioning is, you know, make sure that your pet has an ID tag that is very secure, so that on the off chance that they do jump out of your car and run off, or they do escape the cargo hold, or they escape your carrier while you're waiting to get on the plane, they've got that ID tag on them. And definitely consider getting them microchipped, because it makes it so much easier for them to be returned home. You know, make sure that if you're on a longer trip in the plane, that you have some type of absorbent material in the bottom in case they have an accident and can't wait. And maybe also if you're on a longer flight, or if you're on a car ride and you don't think you'll be able to stop, make sure you bring a water source for your pet. That's definitely important. And, you know, don't give them a lot of food on the flight in case they get sick, but definitely have a few treats handy, because that can kind of soothe them, or a bone that they can chew on or gnaw on or something.
Well, and especially on an airplane, you know, like little training treats, the ones that are like 1 calorie or 1.5 calories, I think are great, because you can give them to the dog or the cat, whatever, as you're ascending. So that way, you know, just like with humans, I would assume it's the same, where our ears pop and swallowing helps to relieve that pressure. Mm-hmm. So it makes me at least feel a little better to know that they're going to be swallowing the treats and hopefully relieving any pressure that's building up in their ears, that they, you know, they don't understand what's going on or how to get rid of it.
Yeah. And going back to, you know, what I was kind of talking about earlier too, is definitely consider, you know, your pet's personality, age, and health. And especially if your trip isn't a very long trip, think about, you know, what's best for them. You know, is it best for them to go with you, or are they going to be so stressed out by the loud noises and change in environment? And, you know, if flying is rough for me, even, you know, is it going to be too stressful for them? And think about, you know, whether you should find a pet sitter or find a daycare to put them in.
Yeah, and then I guess just to throw out a couple little miscellaneous things, I think we mentioned Airbnb. You know, it's one thing we talk about a lot because it's one of the ways we really prefer to travel. You know, we like the occasional hotel, but a lot of times we find that Airbnbs are even more comfortable, bigger, cheaper, and you're, you know, oftentimes in nicer parts of town rather than just being in sort of like a business hotel district. And I like it a lot too, because you can actually filter by accepts pets or pet friendly. And then you can tell the person, it's like, hey, I'm coming with my dog or my cat or whatever. And they can, you know, give you tips about what to do, or tell you if there's a dog park nearby or whatever.
Because if they're local, you know, Bring Fido is great, but sometimes there's too much information or not enough information, and sometimes it's wrong information, or there's no reviews there yet about the restaurant that says it's dog friendly. So definitely getting some tips from a local, it's always helpful and useful, and we've definitely taken advantage of that from time to time. But whether you're choosing to stay in a hotel or an Airbnb, one thing we've noticed and tried to look out for is checking to see if there are spots that Ollie will be comfortable in. So, you know, he likes being able to lay in the sun, so making sure that there's a window that can reflect light down, or, you know, he likes to be able to stare out windows. So is there a window that he can get to? You know, can he lay up on a chair or the back of a couch and look out the window?
Or a deck or a patio he also loves.
Oh my gosh, he loves patios.
Yeah. Which can be a little bit frustrating and annoying for us because he's whining at the door every 5 minutes to either come in or out. I think he's part cat in that respect, where I can't decide if I want to go out or in. I just want to stand in the door. But
yeah,
we've definitely found, though, that I think Airbnbs are the most friendly when it comes to that, too, because it's not very often that you have a deck. Well, I don't know. Maybe you have decks in some hotels, but a lot of them that we've stayed in have just been kind of their self-contained room, no deck. You know, they're not usually going to have furniture or couches in hotel rooms, so they can't really get up on the back of a couch and look out the window or anything like that.
Yeah, you want to make sure that there's a spot for your pet. You know, if they like cozy, dark corners, make sure that either you bring stuff to make them a cozy corner, or that, you know, look at pictures and see, is there a place that, you know, they could hide out in and curl up in and that they would like. I would also say if your pet sleeps with you, try to make sure that you find places that don't have requirements about no pets in the bed. We've definitely seen a couple of those places. And, you know, if there is, definitely be respectful of the homeowner's wishes and try to make alternate arrangements. And if your pet's really going to be too stressed out by that, then try to find someplace else.
Yeah. So for Airbnb, be sure to check out thinkingliberty.com/Airbnb if you've never used that. And that'll take you to the website, and you actually get $40 worth of travel credit to use on your first trip there. And especially if you're traveling with pets, I'd highly recommend that. I think it's much more comfortable for Ollie, at least, whenever he's in an Airbnb versus when he's in a hotel. The one we're recording from right now, I can tell that he really loves, you know, like we said, he loves going out on the deck. He loves that there's a dog park here in the apartment complex, and it's just a big, wide area for him to run around in inside even, too, and play with his toys, as I'm sure you've been hearing all throughout this episode of him squeaking and running around. I think this is the most crazy and hyper he's been during any of our episodes so far, so I know you've probably heard him a little bit on some past episodes, barking and whining and stuff, but this one he's been going nuts, so hopefully that hasn't been too distracting.
All right, so before we wrap up the end of this episode, when I was looking up things about traveling with pets, I stumbled across two cool things that I just wanted to talk about and share real quick. One is that, Zach, I think maybe we should look into doing sometime, is there's a pet sitting site that lets you vacation around the world basically for free. So you join this place. It's called Trusted House Sitters, and essentially you pay $119 per year, which is the catch. But then you're able to look at, you know, who around the world needs a pet sitter. So, you know, you can stay in...
Say pet sitter or house sitter?
Pet sitter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's called Trusted House Sitters is the site. But basically, you pet sit for people. And so you can go to Ireland and stay in a little cottage in Ireland. You know, you're staying in that house for free.
And you're just taking care of their pet.
And you're taking care of their pet. So you get to play with pets.
I don't get the downside. There is no catch.
Well, yeah. So
I mean, you have to pay some money, but I'll pay to pet dogs and brush cats and whatever.
Yeah, so you have to pay to get there or whatever. But once you get there, then you got a free place to stay.
That's awesome.
And you get to play with friendly animals. So it's kind of cool. So I think they spin it to say that you can be hired to stay in an Irish castle or Australian beach houses or estates in the English countryside. I'm sure not everything is as glamorous or as nice as that.
Sometimes you'll probably be staying in a vanilla apartment in the city. But
yeah, and I think, you know, when you first join, it's best to kind of start doing local things first, so that you can get ratings and, you know, move up the ranks of trusted sitters. But once you get good reviews and good ratings, then you can start branching out and going to more and more places. So I just think that was really cool and something to check out and research. Of course, we've never tried it and we've never looked into it, but apparently it's been a thing since 2010. So, and the article that I found is from 2017, so it's still around.
Yeah, in internet time, that's forever, by the way.
So. That is true. And apparently there are a lot of other websites that also let you kind of do the same thing. Let you be a house sitter, Hectic Travels, and Mind My House. So if you have tried these, please let me know, because we might want to talk to you and find out more about these websites. The difference with Trusted House Sitters is it focuses on pets. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm creating an account right now. So we'll definitely have to try this out and report back to you guys.
Yes, we'll let you know how it worked out. The second thing that I found that I thought was pretty cool, and I think this started in February of this year, is that there is an airline that focuses on pets. So,
wow, I was about to mention earlier, like, if there was just one airline that would, like, not even focus on pets, but just say it's like, we will come pet your dog once an hour or something and just check on it, they would have all my money. Like, I don't know, after our experience with Aerolíneas Argentinas, which I think was, you know, flying as American Airlines or whatever, I'm really skeptical about that. And yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to look more into this, because I just found this week, so I haven't had much time since I've been so busy to really look into it. But if you know more about it, please let me know. I'm always looking for more information. It's called ARC, and it's at JFK. And apparently it's for cats, dogs, birds, and even horses.
So they just fly out of JFK?
Yeah, it looks like it. So they just fly out of New York, and it's just this huge space. It's supposed to be targeting to help make a safer passage for animals. It's going to be open. The facility is going to be open 24 hours, or is open, I guess, at this point, 24 hours a day. And I think it opened up in March. And so they just want to have... They just want to make it easier for people and more relaxed. You know, they're going to have cat and dog specific programs. And then apparently they even have like horse specific programs that are pretty cool. And apparently it was the first of its kind here in North America. So it's definitely something to look into and see if it works for you and working for your travel. And they may at some point offer boarding as well. And if it works out well, I mean, I think that's amazing and fantastic that somebody finally opened that up in North America, because it can be so stressful worrying about traveling with your pet.
Yeah, that's another thing we'll have to definitely look into and maybe give a try ourselves.
Yeah.
Maybe we can fly with Ollie on ARC to go pet sit somewhere. That'd be fun.
Yeah, and do like a follow-up episode on how it worked for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you've tried it and you know how it works and you know whether it was good or bad, definitely let us know. Reportedly, for what I've been reading, is that they even have like a little lounge. So if you have like a layover, you can even just like hang out for a couple of hours. There's like, they have like bathing services, and treats and like different play areas that they can hang out in. So it's basically like a lounge for your pets.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I know a lot of airports are starting to get like pet relief areas, but it's cool that they're going even above and beyond that and making it, you know, sort of a lounge. I don't know.
Yeah,
that sounds a little bit ridiculous for me to say lounge, but I guess I get it.
You know, you want to pamper your pets, and more and more of us, myself included, are guilty of spoiling them. So I'm always looking for ways to make his life a little bit easier on the go. But yeah, so I guess that wraps it up for us. You know, we've given a couple of things that we think are helpful and that we've found helpful for us when traveling. The key thing is just to remember to think about, you know, what's best for your little guy or little girl, and, you know, consider their comfort, consider their health, and just look for ways to make it less stressful for them. We have not traveled by bus or train with Ollie, so I don't know, you know, what the rules or requirements for that are. So if any of you listening have done that, please send us a line and let us know, you know, kind of what those experiences are like.
I'm sure it'll vary quite a bit. Like, I've seen...
That's probably true.
Well, I think no pets were allowed at all in Argentina when we were getting on trains and stuff. But I've heard of other places, like, if you can get them inside a little carrier, it's fine. But I've also seen, like, the funny pictures from that where people are shoving, like, bulldogs inside bags and carrying them on the train.
The New York trains.
Yeah. So I guess that's about it. So I'm sure we left something out. So let us know any questions you guys have, any experiences, any stories, hopefully good, but maybe your horror story too, on Facebook or Twitter. So on Twitter, we're at ListenTL, and on Facebook, just search Thinking Liberty. Also, we have a contact form on our page. If you want to submit us some sort of, you know, funny, interesting story there that maybe you've done traveling with pets, just get in contact and let us know. And as I mentioned earlier, if you're thinking about Airbnb-ing, especially with your cat or your dog, you know, check out thinkingliberty.com/Airbnb. If you've never used Airbnb before, you'll get $40 credit on your first trip. So it'd be a win-win for everybody, and especially your pet, who will probably have a better time in an Airbnb than it would, you know, in a hotel. I guess that's it for this time. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.